Hello. This is the second of four talks on the five spiritual faculties, the five powers, the five precious jewels, which are faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Mindfulness is the core element there. And we'll see that as we go along, that mindfulness is good for everything. Last week when we met, I suggested that people try to sort of get those in mind enough to review them from time to time, throughout the day, throughout the week, and particularly see if you could look into your own experience and get a sense of the flavor, the taste of each of these from your own experience, in contrast to a more conceptual knowing about them and being able to have definitions and know this list and so forth in a conceptual way, which is also a good thing to do. But I generally, in whatever Dharma teaching I do, try to bring the topic to our practice itself, to experience itself, to convey my conviction that we can experience all of these things, and that with that experience we turn whatever we know conceptually about the Dharma and the teachings into practice, and we integrate that with our daily life, so that eventually, they say in the Tibetan tradition, there's an outer teacher and there's an inner teacher, and then eventually there's everything is a teaching, everything is a teacher. So we can do that in a number of ways, and of course one way is to see and experience these things that we hear about, the lists, in our own lives. So faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. You might have noticed as you were looking at these in your own experience that it would be often hard to separate them, that they all really do work together in a certain way, or at least there would be pairs working together at any time. So I like to think maybe when you think of the hand and they're separate fingers on the hand, but the hand all works together. There's a uniqueness about the human hand and the way it works, all the appendages, the fingers and the thumb particularly working together. Or I had another thought, those of you who cook might think about this. There are certain spices. Sometimes they come in fours and fives. There's a classic one, of course, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. And a certain flavor is created. Or you think of, Chinese five spice. That's a particular flavor because of the five spices together. Or you think of Italian food. Like garlic, oregano, basil, thyme in Italian food? She's a cook, or an ex-cook. We cooked together years ago. There are certain flavors that you put seasonings together, and they work together. And you can mention them separately, and you can know about them separately, but really the flavor comes when they're working together. So that's something you might have noticed also, that these five faculties, these five powers, tend to work together or in pairs. Another thing that we can notice about them, I suggested that as any sentient being, any human particularly, we would say, has five senses, born with five senses, which we would say are our sensory faculties, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, that we could also think of these five faculties as also things, again, powers, faculties that we are born with the potential to cultivate, and that when we do cultivate them, when we learn about them, we learn to strengthen them, we see that they take us, they are the faculties that take us on the more spiritual journey, the spiritual path. And so another thing that you might notice about them when you're learning to practice paying attention is that they do not reinforce the sense of self. That there's something inherent in their flavor. Just as the five senses tend to reinforce the sense of self, to create the illusion of self, because I'm seeing, right? I'm hearing. There is that experience of this belongs to me. This is my sensation. It particularly shows up when, you know, we have arguments about sensation, like, it's too hot in here. And someone else, no, it's really cold. Someone else, it's stuffy, open the window. No, no, close the window, I'm really cold. So the five sensations, the five sense doors, tend, just as the way they function, to reinforce the sense of self. These five spiritual faculties, faith, energy, concentration, mindfulness, and wisdom, will tend not to reinforce the sense of self. And you can watch them just going off a little bit when there's strong sense of self or strong sense of ego, and you'll notice letting go of the ego will increase the experience of them a little bit. So experiment with that as well. I did read a paragraph from Joseph Goldstein from Seeking the Heart of Wisdom, which I said is one of my favorite, maybe one among the best paragraphs about these five faculties. You know, if you had to have them explain, and particularly their relationships with each other in a paragraph, this is one of the best. So I want to share that with you again tonight, particularly for those who weren't here last week. The five spiritual faculties, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, are our greatest friends and allies on this journey of understanding. These qualities are most powerful when they are in balance. Faith needs to be balanced with wisdom, so that faith is not blind and wisdom is not shallow or hypocritical. When wisdom outstrips faith, we can develop a pattern where we know something and even know it deeply from our own experience, yet do not live it. Faith brings the quality of commitment to our understanding. Energy needs to be balanced with concentration. Effort will bring lucidity, clarity, and energy to the mind, which concentration balances with calmness and depth. An unbalanced effort makes us restless and scattered, and too much concentration that is not energized comes close to torpor and sleep. Mindfulness is the factor that balances all these and is therefore always beneficial. So tonight I would like to speak now of faith and wisdom, because we saw from what Joseph said, and you see it mentioned in many places, that faith is balanced by wisdom. Wisdom is balanced by faith. So it fits to speak of them a little bit together. even though they're first and last on the list. When we address faith, first we have to work with some of our conditioning around the word. Maybe we had experiences in our own lives, others, of faith is something imposed, kind of blind faith. Sometimes there are people of certain faiths who come knocking at our door, wanting to impose them on us, and there's a sense of a sort of a rigidity. Sometimes people have had much more traumatic experiences with the experience of someone wanting to impose their conceptual faith, their notions on them. So it can be hard to work with that word again. So conviction can be another one, if you want to use that term and not push the buttons of faith so much. Or we can explore the word in Pali. It's sadha. It means to place the heart upon. So it's a verb. This is really an important thing. It helps us shift our feeling when we consider, what if faith is a verb? In the Old English, it would have an E on the end, you know, to faith, instead of a noun. That takes it out of more of the realm of difficulty. And then this notion of to place the heart upon something. So it's an active energy, which would give it a little bit more masculine flavor, actually, if you think. And wisdom is a receptive energy and is considered more feminine. So, for example, in the Tibetan tradition, there's the teaching, in the Mahayana in general, the Prajnaparamita Sutra, the Sutra of the Perfection of Wisdom. And in Tibetan tradition, if you see a picture of the being called Prajnaparamita, she's a she. So, and also in Western traditions, we have Sophia as wisdom. So there are places where we see this, there's an archetypal kind of energy there. Wisdom more feminine, receptive, faith a little bit more dynamic, more masculine. So to take an action, which we would call faith, to place our heart upon something. I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, there's another in the Pali for sadha. I think it means hospitality. I don't know if we have any Pali folk scholars here. I'm pretty sure it means there's another meaning of it that is somehow related to hospitality, which, yeah? Thank you.
Prasad is blessed food.
Pardon?
Prasad is blessed.
Oh, prasad, yes, sadha. This is, so does prasad relate to sadha in some way? Maybe.
Am I mishearing
you? I think so, yeah, yeah. What's the Sanskrit? You know, the shraddha, yeah, shraddha. And the Pali is sadha, yeah. So that'll be a shift when you start to continue to reflect on faith in your own life experience. Think of it as a verb. And when you're remembering, think about placing your heart, where you have placed your heart. So I did want to mention, you know, I said last week we should maybe not read so much and just spend the week homework with experiencing, but it's okay now to read. And there are a lot of lovely articles on the five faculties, the five powers. There is a particularly wonderful book on faith by Sharon Salzberg. I think you might have a couple more in the library here. And I would like to highly recommend that book, particularly because the way that she writes this book, it's actually very autobiographical. She tells the story of her own spiritual journey and the underlying active energy theme is faith. So it's a wonderful presentation of teachings on faith, but they're very skillfully interwoven into a story of someone's spiritual journey. And the subtitle is Trusting Your Own Deepest Experience. So right away you see it in the title. This is a book about faith, but it's not a noun. Trusting your own deepest experience. She puts that little gerund right in there to let you know it's going to be a different kind of book about faith. And it very, very good, both in content and in the story of her journey. So for faith, if you'd like, it's you come out having read this. You have a number of experiences of faith while you're reading it, and you come out with more of a sense of it, a taste of it, a feeling of faith. So it's a little bit like one long poem in a way. It's very, very well done. Very, very beautiful, beautiful book. So I wanted to try to articulate a little bit about what my own personal experience of faith over time. And then, of course, faced with Sharon's book, one sees, oh, yes, that would be a book, wouldn't it? We don't have time for a book here. In my own life, I was born into the Catholic religion, so I had the opportunity for a lot of faith to come forward at a very young age. And I was fortunate I didn't get too much of the downside of that tradition. So I was able to taste that at a very young age. And so I thought a lot about what to bring you, and I actually decided, because of my own experience of faith over time, a little bit quirky and ultimately kind of spooky in the best sense of that word. I have a poem that I want to read to you, which is one of my most favorite poems. However, I don't know who wrote this poem. I'm thinking it was one of the national poet laureates, but I'm not sure. So if anybody recognizes this and knows who wrote it, come up afterwards and tell me. But you'll see why that you'll see the flavor of my early experience with the Catholic tradition in the notion of Catholic saints. We think of Catholic saints as persons of faith, and the Buddhist tradition often will talk about Buddhist saints. But faith grows and grows to get at its deepest very, very otherworldly, I feel, or just more than ordinary. The saints cannot distinguish between being with other people and being alone, another good reason for becoming one. They live in trees and eat air, staring past or through us. They see things which we would call not there. We, on the contrary, see them. They smell of old fur coats stored for a long time in the attic. When they move, they ripple. Two of them passed here yesterday, filled and vacated and filled by the wind, like drained pillows blowing across a derelict lot, their twisted and scorched feet not touching the ground, their feathers catching in thistles. What they touched, emptied of color. Whether they are dead or not is a moot point. Shreds of them litter history. A hand here, a bone there. Is it suffering or goodness that makes them holy? Or can anyone tell the difference? Though they pray, they do not pray for us. Prayers peel off them like burned skin healing. Once they tried to save something, others or their own souls, now they seem to have no use, like the colors on blind fish. Nevertheless, they are sacred. They drift through the atmosphere, their blue eyes sucked dry by the ordeal of seeing, exuding gaps in the landscape as water exudes mist. They blink, and reality shivers. The reason I relate that to faith is because when faith is described in the texts and in the books, it's spoken of as layering and deepening from bright faith. There's a term called bright faith, which is sort of the falling in love kind of faith, the excitement faith, the delighted, exuberant excitement of being connected with something brand new, and there's a sense of hurling oneself into it, and a kind of darker aspect of this can be the kind of blind faith that we sometimes see and sometimes even experience, that we're so excited about the newness of something, the teachings, our path, what it's done for us, what it's done for others, that this glowy, ecstatic faith comes up. And that's this young kind of energy comes up in us. It's actually quite vulnerable. So I would say to take care in your own self if you're experiencing this. And certainly be kind and careful to others when you see someone in the throes of this sort of bright faith in whatever, because it's a fragile thing. And many, I would imagine, many people in this room have some memories of a stage of bright faith in their life. In something or someone or some path or some journey that maybe got bruised or even stomped on and that became a wound that needed healing. So we want to just know the vulnerability of that. And then faith proceeds to a stage that is called verified faith. It's comes from actually questioning in a very positive way, kind of continuing on the journey And whereas bright faith often feels like it's a faith in something out there, the verified faith starts to be more and more an internalized experience, so that we would be more, when people would ask or when we're reflecting on this experience of faith, we feel it as an inward thing instead of more of an outward thing, or items on a list, or a someone we're faith in, or a belief system. It's more of an internal experience. Often the more theistic traditions, or the traditions so-called revealed faith, don't allow for much of this questioning and internalizing. But it's actually essential in particularly in the Buddhist path. Always that phrase, the Pali word ehipasiko, come and see for yourself. The Buddha always telling people not to just believe him, but come and see for yourself. So this is a rich, rich part. Many of us, I'm sure, here are in this stage of verified faith. There's a sense of getting the conviction, getting the strength of the path, feeling the strength, feeling yourself walking the path, and so forth. But then there's a final stage that begins to grow. It's called abiding, enduring, unwavering faith. And particularly in the Buddhist tradition, we would call this the stage where there's true faith in the Buddha, faith in the Dhamma. And then that even deepens to a kind of faith that is a faith in the Buddha nature within oneself and within all beings, the possibility for Buddhahood in all beings. In the Mahayana tradition, they start to speak of the bodhisattva path, and the faith transforms itself or adds to it this energy, this commitment and dedication to one's life should benefit all beings. So much so that vows are taken, this life and subsequent lifetime from till endless time, from beginningless to endless time and all through time, one dedicates oneself, one's life, to benefit of all beings. And that kind of conviction begins to be, you can just taste a flavor. It's an otherworldly sort of flavor, sort of taste. It is relentless. It is unshakable. It is enduring. It is ever present in all the other vicissitudes of life. It becomes the only thing that one can have a sense sometimes when there's difficulty in life, fear, despair, sorrows and griefs, but with that taste of that ever-enduring faith, it becomes the life raft or the one true thing. Suzuki Roshi said about the bodhisattva vow and the path of the bodhisattva, even if the sun were to rise in the west, the bodhisattva has only one way. So that's a statement of a kind of an energy and a conviction and a faith that is completely unshakable. And that's why, that's where I get the flavor of this very unusual poem, where the poet used the word saints, which we would register as persons of faith, connect with the notion of faith, but then proceeds to describe beings of an altered reality that have an effect on this world, but it's not the effect that we expect. And clearly all the conceptual notions of what they would do or why they would do it just sort of fall away. And there's this sense of no particular rational, logical purpose, and yet an energy that is irrefutably, undeniably present and changes everything. And that's really possible, to follow the journey and to proceed on the path to a place of faith that is like that, so that it becomes the one true thing, and yet almost completely indescribable, and in which case, why, again, I gravitate to this very, very odd poem. So for me, the energy of faith and the journey of faith is also, I have an affinity for that word, sacred. There is a power and a strength that we can develop inside of ourselves by acting in the direction of faith, that again, something so sacred. When you speak of saints, these are sacred beings. That's the implication in whatever tradition. But it has the stages, so we can develop the stages. We go from bright faith, we keep an eye out for blind faith, unfolding to gradually through our own experience, verified by our own experience. We can follow teachings, we can follow teachers. We then begin to have the inner verification. Oh, these things work, these techniques and so forth. They do work. There are people that we admire on this journey. Sarah Doering gave a talk, actually, that is now a nice little article on these five faculties, which I'm sure you can Google and find it somewhere. I wanted just a little paragraph. Faith, which here means trust and confidence in the Dharma, inspires an outpouring of energy. When energy is strong, then the effort to be alert and pay attention is easy. Mindfulness prospers and becomes more and more continuous. The stronger the continuity of mindfulness, the more focused and steady the mind. Concentration grows. As concentration deepens, in the stillness of an attentive mind, wisdom emerges. It is the wisdom of emptiness, whose only expression is love. So you see how she went through all five there, and you can see them kind of circling and circling. Faith, trust, confidence inspires an outpouring of energy. Energy is strong, and then there's more effort and alertness. Mindfulness prospers, becomes more continuous. Concentration gets easier. Concentration strengthens the attentive mind, and wisdom emerges, the wisdom of emptiness, whose only expression is love. Another flavor of this conviction, if we want to go instead of faith, call it conviction, there's trust, there's belief, and there's willingness. Sometimes just willingness to try it out, willingness to believe just for a while to see how it goes. Trust, belief, willingness. So these three come together in this conviction energy that we would call faith. So you can experiment with that as well. Trust, belief, It can be belief in the teachings. Ultimately, the bottom line of that belief is actually a very practical, pragmatic, you might even say scientific, causes and conditions give rise to results. It's the main theme of the Buddha's teaching. All this that we experience is the result of very specific and precise causes and conditions. Certain causes give rise to certain results. Other causes will give rise to other results. Many causes give rise to suffering. There are other causes that will give rise to the ending of suffering. Belief in that teaching, then a willingness to put the teachings into practice, because this isn't a kind of a theistic or revealed faith. This is a path whose teachings and the experience of them is one's own responsibility. That's actually the whole point. That's what attracts a lot of us. It's the point is that we learn, we practice, and we experience results. We experience freedom. We don't just hear a lovely story of some wonderful being who experienced freedom, who we then are required to worship. And maybe if we're lucky, that being will take us under his or her wing. But we ourselves can experience freedom. But it's our responsibility to put the teachings into practice. Then as we practice, we have more conviction, more faith, energy grows. Techniques of mindfulness and concentration we'll speak of next week and the week after. But then we move to wisdom. Wisdom develops. Wisdom arises. Many, many conversations about what wisdom is and what wisdom isn't. The perfection of wisdom, the Prajnaparamita Sutras. But we could go tonight to a core teaching. Sampajano, Sati Sampajano. Clearly knowing. That's what wisdom is in our experience. A moment, moments of clear knowing. Sati Sampajano. Clear knowing. Knowing what is the reality of this moment. So there's distraction and there's clear knowing. Mindfulness helps us see the difference. We know when we're distracted. Actually, we usually know 1 second after. Oh, wow, a lot of distraction just happened and now I'm back. Clearly knowing that I was just distracted for 5 minutes, 5 weeks, 5 months, 5 years, whatever. But here I am clearly knowing about distraction. Here I am clearly knowing mindfulness. So right now, be aware of the sensation of hearing. So you've been listening, but now you want to insert mindfulness of hearing. So now be aware of the sensation of sitting. The pressure. We've been sitting and mindfulness of that sensation has come and gone all evening, but now clearly knowing this moment's experience. Seeing. You've all been looking at me. Now mindfulness of seeing. Clearly knowing seeing. Wisdom of knowing what's going on in this moment. Clearly knowing. Clearly knowing conviction when conviction arises. Wisdom, the core of the wisdom we're moving toward, or at least one exciting energy in this wisdom, is the ability to see the moments of intention, to see our motivation, and to make a choice. choice to proceed with actions of faith, choice to intend mindfulness, choice to intend energy, choice to concentrate, choice to let it go, be distracted, daydream a while. Moments of choice. Choice to proceed on the path. Everybody keeps showing up here. This is a powerful wisdom choices going on of all the things one can do on a Tuesday evening. The choice to keep showing up. Even in the phases of difficulty, which may be a day, a week, a month, a year, just keep showing up for our path. That's a wisdom choice. Clearly knowing that this path leads us onward. That cultivating the qualities of faith, energy, or dedication, mindfulness, the golden mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, are leading onward for us. Faith, the energy, the awareness, the clearly knowing that there are choices and that we can cultivate wise choices. Clearly knowing the moments of wisdom. Stringing them together, they always say like a mala, like beads on a mala, like beads on a rosary. Stringing together moments of wisdom, moments of clear knowing. Begin, like, it's a bit like a pointillist painting our experience of life as we, particularly as we're move along on the path. Beginning, maybe not so much, but later we begin to realize that there's another image forming the journey, that there's the ordinary world and how it looks, and then we keep adding these moments of mindfulness, moments of clear knowing, and something else begins to emerge from what seemed like a lot of chaos. And that's seeing the way things actually are and the precious gems of wisdom, of truth that emerge. For example, that everything is always changing, that everything is in flux, that everything is impermanent, that we don't have control of a single thing. Why is this good news? Because we were holding on. We were pretending we had control, and it was hurting. Now that we find out, it's always moving. There's no way to control it. What a relief. I don't have to be in charge, because nobody can be. Resting, a little bit of resting from the intensity, the suffering of trying so hard to get it right. What the heck? Get it wrong. Right, wrong. These are not part of the true reality or the reality of truth. So we can let go of that particular kind of suffering, the flavor of that. So many ways that we saw things, we misperceived and went after goals and notions and so forth that increased our suffering. When we see that clearly, we can let it go. Ultimately, it comes down to the teachings are a little bit like if I happen to have this chair on my foot. And I'm sitting here, and I say, my foot hurts, my foot hurts. And you say, well, Jude, move the chair. And I look, oh, then of course I would move the chair once I know what's causing the suffering. That's a very silly, simplistic example, but in a way, that's how it is. We continue walking, we do a lot of work, we apply a lot of energy, we move along the path. And then in a moment we see, ah, there was a strong sense of me. It was so tight. I wanted this. I didn't want that. And that was what was happening. So I kept wanting this and trying to get rid of that and wanting this and trying to get rid of that. And then I collapsed in exhaustion. And that was 30 years, 35 years. But then to see, oh, I could just stop wanting this. I could let go of disliking that. Just rest in the middle, in some balance of equanimity, much less suffering. Clearly seeing, that's the wisdom. Faith and wisdom can work together. They balance, they can be balanced. Faith is an active energy. Wisdom is receptive. We didn't know that. We thought wisdom was knowledge. We thought many degrees would help, right? Go to school, do a lot of studying, read a lot of things, pile up a lot of knowledge, very active. But wait, wisdom isn't active, it's receptive. We sit still and clearly see, and wisdom arises intuitively. But to get to the seat, we need the active energy of faith, because it's a crazy thing we do. We go here, we schlep all over town, come hours, we pull out the chairs, and then we sit down and we don't do anything. But we do something, of course. But really, from the ordinary world sense, we keep letting go of ordinary habits. We don't think. We don't sit and think. We sit and let go of think. Let go of think. Let go of think. So that takes faith. That takes the active energy of faith that this, what we are choosing to do, moment of choice, intention, is onward leading, and it's leading to something that has a tremendous worth. Except oddly, the more worth it has, in its own right, the less worth it has in the ordinary world. So then we get this odd poem of saints shimmering and floating and not seeming to have particular use, though their presence certainly litters history. So just a couple of things that we also mentioned last week, but to repeat, when there's too much faith, we can get very dogmatic. So we've seen this possibly in ourselves, possibly in those people that come to our door, possibly in various other ways. We see people would testify to have very strong faith, but very, very dogmatic, very difficult to get to have any kind of conversation. There's something sort of static there in that it's a blind belief. We get attached to our views. This is my view. This is my opinion. I'm not going to listen to anybody else. That the dogmatism of faith. So we want to watch that. We've got a middle path here. It's called the middle path for a reason. So we balance that. Too much wisdom. You think, well, how could that be? How could you find that? But without the energy of faith, the wisdom energy can get really self-satisfied. And you may have seen that in yourself or in others, or had that experience, or maybe even in certain other groups that sometimes kind of morph into things we might call cults. There's people have a lot of ability, a lot of realization. You know, we can go to certain talks by certain of beings like that, and it's like, wow, you know. And yet, you can tell there's something off. Now, what's, it's something off. And what it is that faith energy somehow got stopped or derailed, and there wasn't the willingness to keep going. The excitement of, all right, then what's next? What can I learn more of? How can I proceed on the path? There is the misunderstanding of having arrived at some pinnacle. But you get that pinnacle flavor from people who have that notion of the pinnacle. The real people at the pinnacle are so humble. They would be the last to claim any pinnacle achievement. And by that, one can see, that's it. It's paradoxical, isn't it? So we want to learn to taste them and to balance the two, to see them in ourselves. Sometimes we get a little pinnacle-y. Look at me. Damn, I'm good, you know. I've really done well. And then we need that energy of faith to look around and say, all right, let me proceed. Let me push along, continue on the path. Or sometimes we get a little bit over energy with the faith, and then we need to pay more attention, go toward more mindfulness to cultivate more wisdom, see more clearly. So we'll balance those two. We're coming to the end of the evening. I have a few more things. I'll put them next week. We'll also talk about next week energy and concentration and balancing those two. We'll say a little bit more about faith and wisdom, of course, and the golden mindfulness. But again, this path is a path of deepening dedication. So I'd like to again offer you, it is the oddest thing that I keep doing this because of my lack of chanting ability, but once again I would like to offer you another chanting from the Pali. This is a beautiful verse that praise the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and the translation loosely is that I have no other refuge. The Buddha is my refuge, my ultimate refuge, my foremost refuge. And through the speaking of this truth, may I be blessed always. It's a little metta in there. And then it's the Dhamma, and then it's the Sangha. If anybody knows these, feel free to join in. I'll try. Nati me saranam anyam, buddho me saranam varam. Etena sa ca vacena soti me hotu sabada. Nati me saranam anyam, dhammo me saranam varam. Etena sa ca vacena soti me hotu sabada. Nati me saranam anyam, sangho me saranam varam. Etena sa ca vacena soti me hotu sabada. Soti me hotu sabada.